Ah, pregnancy. A time of such joy for some, such admiration for your body and excitement for what parenting will bring. But also for some, crippling anxiety, weird aches, pains and cravings, and the prospect that you actually have to give birth to this baby at some point. Pregnancy can be a really strange period of your life and can feel so different for so many people. Season 2 of Bun in the Oven is here to help you navigate this bonkers time alongside me, Holly Grant, whilst I also navigate this bonkers time during my current second pregnancy. In this season of the podcast, I'm joined by experts in all areas of maternal and perinatal health in real time throughout this pregnancy to cover topics that mean you don't have to spend hours on Google down a rabbit hole with no real evidence-based answer at the end of it all. I've worked with thousands of women over the last 11 years, and specifically since launching the Bump Plan in 2020. I have heard everything and admitted everything, so don't worry, we cover the embarrassing, gross stuff that you're not sure you want to ask your best friend. See, this is the information you wish you knew before you even knew you needed it. I can't wait for you to join me on this journey as we work out what on earth we're doing together. Enjoy season 2. In today's episode of Bun in the Oven, I'm talking to one of my absolute favourite people to vent with, anti-diet registered nutritionist Laura Thomas, all about how to navigate your changing body during pregnancy and the postnatal period. I'm now 20 weeks pregnant and growing rapidly with what I can only describe as a future Beckham in my uterus. As this is my second pregnancy, I've been through the excitement of a growing bump the first time around, the absolute shock at my postnatal body, and the knowledge of what is to come the second time around. As someone who is pretty body confident and who is slim, white, able-bodied, I'm able to ignore the comments we can so often hear from strangers on my bump size and due date. But for many, this period of constant and consistent body change can be tough, daunting, and triggering. So in today's episode, Laura and I discuss what diet culture is and how it affects our lives. Why we're in a society where people feel it's acceptable to comment on another person's body. Why we put certain bodies on such a pedestal. And how this can make pregnancy and postpartum a really testing time for a person's body acceptance. Laura and I go back a long way. As a registered nutritionist, Laura specialises in intuitive eating and weight-inclusive nutrition. She supports families who are experiencing feeding and eating challenges to heal their relationship with food and their bodies. She's author of the Can I Have Another Snack newsletter and host of the podcast of the same name. She's also the author of 2 books, Just Eat It and How to Just Eat It. This podcast is for you if you're struggling to navigate the physical changes that come with pregnancy, labour and the postnatal period. If you find the pressure from the media to look a certain way during pregnancy or snap back postnatally, or if you've previously struggled with disordered eating, fat shaming from healthcare professionals or body image concerns. We hope it helps you navigate this period of your lives and allows you to show yourself kindness where possible. Enjoy. And now, ahead of this episode, a few words from our sponsor. Given the theme of this podcast, I imagine that some of you are currently pregnant or planning a family. So many women I know just aren't sure how to move their body safely during this changing time, or they want to stay active but need someone to show them the way and hold their hand. That's where the Bump Plan Pregnancy comes in. The Bump Plan Pregnancy is a holistic prenatal fitness plan that allows you to work out with confidence at each trimester of your pregnancy. Founded by myself, Holly Grant, the Bump Plan Pregnancy has already helped over 25,000 pregnant women stay active safely and feel empowered throughout their pregnancies. Through its trimester-specific workouts, in which I'm always at the same stage of my pregnancy as you will be in yours, extensive education hub, discount hub, and growing Facebook community, you'll feel supported and part of a welcome community. Let me help you move safely through your pregnancy, maintain your fitness and strength, and enter parenthood strong and prepared for all the demands it poses. As a listener of Bun in the Oven, I'm offering you 20% per month off the cost of your monthly subscription to the Bump Plan, simply by entering the code BUN20 at checkout. To get started today, simply head to pilatespt.co.uk/the-bump-plan and enter the code BUN20 at checkout. That's BUN20 in lowercase to get 20% off the monthly cost of the Bump Plan pregnancy. Join our community today and enter labour and motherhood strong, capable and prepared with the Bump Plan. Hi Laura, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Hey Holly, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. How does it feel being on the other side? Because you are an avid podcaster.
You know, I actually haven't been a guest on a podcast for a really long time. So yeah, this will be fun. We'll just try not to go into interviewer mode and start asking you all the questions.
So difficult to not do that, isn't it? So today we're going to be talking kind of about the difficulties that women can have, pregnant people can have whilst they're pregnant, around body image and comments from other people and, you know, how the media tend to portray pregnant bodies compared to postnatal bodies, and all of the above, and I'm sure more. But I feel like overall, what we're going to be talking about today is going to be quite heavily rooted in diet culture, which some people might be familiar with, some might not be. And you are so good at describing and kind of going against diet culture. So could you start off by kind of talking to us a little bit about diet culture and how it manifests itself in our lives?
Yeah, I mean, I always find it quite tricky to give a succinct definition of diet culture because it's so insidious and it's so sneaky and it's kind of everywhere and nowhere all at the same time. It can be kind of, you know, the blatant messaging that we get from women's magazines and in the media about, well, in the context of pregnancy and postpartum, around like snapping back, for example, or it could be, you know, like shredding for the wedding, or, you know, all of these kind of really glaring in your face messages that, you know, you need to go on a diet, you need to lose weight, you need to look a certain way to be acceptable. But it can also be all of these really kind of invisible things that we don't even notice, we don't even recognize that they're there. So unless we're confronted with them. So, you know, something I'm thinking about is that in most high street shops, the clothing size might, you know, stop at like a 16 or an 18. Or, you know, it might be the kind of like little comments that we get from our friends and family that they're not being overt, but they're kind of, you know, hinting strongly that, you know, you should lose weight or look a certain way. So I guess why it's so tricky is because, yes, there are those big, obvious in your face messages that you should lose weight and look a certain way or eat a certain way. But then there are the kind of more subtle, kind of really insidious messages that we don't notice, but they're always there. And it might be, you know, lack of representation or like a lack of accessibility to different clothing sizes, like I mentioned before. But all of this, all of diet culture, and I think it's really, really important to name that diet culture is kind of just like an offshoot of other systems of oppression. And so what I mean by that is it piggybacks off of anti-fat bias and fat phobia. It piggybacks off of racism. It piggybacks off of ableism and ageism and patriarchy. So it's kind of like the sort of nexus of all of these really problematic systems that ends up creating this hierarchy of bodies with a thin, you know, conventionally pretty, usually white, cis, straight woman at the top of that hierarchy or man. And then everybody else kind of gets pushed to the margins and there's less and less space and they are more and more subjugated the further away from that sort of ideal that we get.
So that's a really great summary.
It's a big thing to kind of wrap our heads around because it isn't just like a quick, you know, I can't just give this quick little definition.
And because we're so used to it as well, you know, some of the things that you're listing, as you said, are so in the background, you're not always even aware of them. And it was really interesting when we created the Bump Plan pregnancy, so the first Bump Plan, we were looking for imagery for the website originally. And, you know, even if you go onto
Shutterstock, there's lots of other ones, yeah. You know, a stock imagery database, and you type in, or even Google images, and you type in, you know, pregnant woman mm-hmm. exercising, you know, wow, everyone looks exactly the same. It's white, blonde, slim, you know, all the definitions that you mentioned, they're all sat there as well, just kind of looking really happy about life, you know, looking mm-hmm. really chilled. And not only did that not represent in any way actual exercise during pregnancy, where you might be wearing like your husband's old t-shirt, you know, and you might yeah. be looking sweaty, and you might be jumping around the living room. It also just did not represent pregnant bodies. And I've spent mm-hmm. 11 years looking at pregnant bodies, and mm-hmm. that is not what they look like. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. even that, you know, if that's what most businesses are able to draw from, if that's the imagery they have available to them, then no wonder we're just seeing the same bodies constantly in mm-hmm. front of us. And yeah. so what we ended up having to do was sourcing, doing our own shoots and sourcing our own models and trying to be as diverse as possible. But obviously that comes at a cost, and not all businesses will be able to do mm-hmm. that. So they just take images yeah. from those stock photos.
But I really appreciate that you went to the lengths to do that. I think that's really ethical business practice, because, you know, what is the antithesis of that is you, and I understand why people do this. Don't get me wrong. I've owned a small business, and I understand that, you know, you have to try and cut costs wherever you can. But how does it make people feel? What does it leave them with if they see all of these idealized images of pregnancy, of postpartum? What you get is a bigger and bigger disconnect between the imagery that you're seeing and what you're actually experiencing in your body. And that's when that chasm that opens up between the idealized images and what we're actually seeing is where shame and embarrassment and disgust grow around our own bodies. It's an additional cost to you, but I think that that has huge, huge, you know, immeasurable impact on people's well-being.
I hope so. And, you know, we also know that for a long time, brands were using non-pregnant people as models and then giving them a baby bump, like an actual padded bump.
I think they still do that.
They do. But I think that now I don't know if it's a law or if it's more just kind of standard practice that they have to list it now. So for example, mm-hmm. in ASOS, if they use someone who's using a padded bump, they have to say underneath. But I do still question, I mean, why are we still using non-pregnant women to advertise pregnant clothing? Because without being too specific, it's not just during pregnancy, our bodies change in so many different ways. It's not just that we grow a bump, like everything changes, you know, your hips get wider, even down to like your arches of your feet change. Mm-hmm. You know, most of us will gain weight in the rest of our bodies as well. Our faces might look different. And so I think it's really insincere to still choose, and also unfair if you're a pregnant model who still mm-hmm. needs to have work and get paid, to still use very small models and then simply strap a bump to them mm-hmm. as long as you're listing it underneath. It's just, mm-hmm. again, it's an issue where they're not representing actual pregnant people in mm-hmm. their imagery.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and again, I understand why they have to do this, but even the fact that all of the images, you know, when we're looking at maternity clothes or nursing bras or, you know, whatever it might be, we're again seeing models. We're not seeing just the average pregnant person. And even that, even if they are plus size models, even if they are, you know, actually pregnant models, they're still models. And they still, you know, they have a lot of body privilege that just the average person isn't walking around with. And so I really think it's important and helpful to keep that in mind, you know, as a pregnant person looking and consuming and viewing these adverts. And at the same time, we really need to push the industry to change, to show more, I don't want to say real bodies, because obviously models have real bodies as well, but more representative bodies.
More variety, mm. especially when you think of when we look in magazines, often it's, you know, other pregnant women that we might see that aren't necessarily models and postnatal might be celebrities mm-hmm. who it's really important that we realize, and I've also tried to be really open about this, that they have funds and time and experts to help them look a certain way during pregnancy mm-hmm. and postnatally. because sadly their bodies are sometimes their income. And so that is a priority for them. But it takes a lot of childcare and work and experts to look that way. So again, we're still not really seeing a representation of the rest of us. Yeah. And magazines love showing like, oh, wow, look at so-and-so who's just had a baby. Look how amazing she snapped back just 2 weeks after having a baby. They love doing that, but that is not representing the general population.
I would love it if on, you know, those magazine articles, they listed, you know, the time, the money and the labor that all just gets completely erased from those articles and just kind of hidden behind the scenes. But, you know, there's so much, as you say, that goes into that, that, you know, if we understood, if we could see, if that was all more visible, I think we would have we'd be much gentler with ourselves because we know we don't have access to those resources. I wish that was just more apparent what actually goes into it. Because I think we know, right? But it's really easy not to get sucked into kind of this idealized image.
And I can almost help kind of bridge this gap as well, because given my role, I've been worked in the fitness industry for 11 years and I've worked with lots and lots of different people. And so there have been times where I have been part of that journey for somebody. And I think it's really important that we're clear that, you know, if somebody's job does rely on their body looking a certain way, whilst that would not be my choice at any day of the week, for some, that is how they earn their money. And so it is a priority for them, potentially after they've had a baby, to look a certain way, because otherwise they might sadly not get more work or they might lose out on a role. So I think we have to be really honest that there are always going to be people who just have to look a certain way quickly after they've had a baby. Whether we agree with that or not, that's the case. Those people have the funds. And I have been part of some of those journeys. And so I can be really honest about what goes into that. So first of all, these are people who are potentially getting back into, if we're talking postnatally, these are people who are getting back into fitness probably earlier than they really should, you know, than we would like them to. They have a huge amount of childcare. So they will have a small child whom they don't get to spend the amount of time that they would want to with. And so somebody else will be managing a lot of that childcare. They will have a chef who's potentially also a nutritionist who cooks all of their meals and all of their snacks, which are going to be probably quite restrictive, which may or may not affect their ability to breastfeed if they wish to. And so it's a huge, and it's hard work and it's painful and it's tiring at a time where you're also very tired as well. So for those people, you know, they're potentially doing it because they have to, but it's not an enjoyable experience. And it's not an experience that the rest of us would want to or have to do. If our salary is not based on the way our body looks, like why would the rest of us even want to try and aim towards that? So I think it's just we have to, and also, sorry, over all of that, it's expensive. That all of those different experts costs a huge amount of money. You know, it's just that the rest of us couldn't even afford it, even if we wanted to. So I just think we have to be really open that we're looking and comparing ourselves potentially to images of women who have gone through a lot to look that way, that actually we shouldn't even really be trying to compare ourselves to. In case anyone was looking at those images and didn't realize that actually to get to look like that quickly is a lot of heartache and money and pain.
And I think it's just a real indictment on just a broader whom the media chooses to use, that this level of pressure is placed on postpartum people, and you know, that there aren't more options. You know, I think, you know, why can't that woman who is modeling, let's say, show up in, you know, the body that she's in rather than the body that she's had to manufacture through this, you know, excruciating process. So we need, you know, I think the answer is not just, oh, well, this is everything that goes into producing this perfected image. The solution has to be a pushback against the idealized image, full stop.
Like, why do they have to look that way to get their roles, to have a salary, to go back to work? Yeah. Agreed. And why are we putting women postnatally who look a certain way quickly on a pedestal rather than celebrating, like, you know, a new mum who's managed to actually, like, have a shower and get out of the house in the morning, or, you know, a new mum who is, I don't know, you know, managing to enjoy the first few weeks of parenting. You know, there are so many other things that we should be celebrating other than how a woman looks after she gives birth.
Yeah, and I suppose something I've been thinking a lot about lately and have been having conversations both with my clients but, you know, also on my podcast is this sort of one-dimensional narrative that is available to folks postpartum. So I think, you know, traditionally we've heard a lot about snapback culture and, you know, getting your baby body back and the nine in, nine out, all of that kind of stuff. Everything that we know is really, really, really problematic. And as a sort of pushback to that, which is understandable and, you know, important in its own right, is this message of, okay, let's we need a bit more gratitude for our bodies. Look at this incredible thing that they've done. And yes, but both of those messages, I think, are too simplistic. They're too problem, you know, they are both problematic in their own right. From the perspective that, well, from lots of different perspectives, but the reality of having this monumental change to your body, to your identity, and to your life, we just cannot flatten that experience down into a couple of little sound bites. So I have a real problem with both of those narratives in different ways. But I think we need to have more conversations that speak to the both and of our experiences around pregnancy. And this is something that I touched on for the article that I wrote for the Bump Plan around sort of navigating body image and diet culture postpartum, is that we need to be able to sit with, because it's, I suppose what I'm getting at is that both of those, you know, narratives, both of those discourses, they talk to what physically, how our bodies physically look, how they change, right? That, you know, okay, yes, your body is bigger, but look at this amazing thing that it's done. But it doesn't talk to the tensions in our experience. So what I mean by that is, yes, our bodies have, you know, done this incredible thing. It's a miracle, really. And you might be experiencing a lot of grief. You might be experiencing trauma from a birth that didn't go the way that you hoped. You might be experiencing really difficult, painful feelings because, you know, this is a rainbow baby. Or you might be really unsupported and looking at pictures of, you know, mums who, on social media, who, you know, have their shit together in inverted commas, and you're drowning, you have postpartum depression, your partner isn't helping, you maybe don't have a partner, that you are struggling with this huge shift in identity that comes with being a mother or being a parent for the first time. And it's all of that messiness that just gets glossed over when we just talk about how our bodies look. And, you know, I know this is something that you talk a lot about. It's something that I've experienced as well. There's the pain in our bodies. There's a lot of pain that, you know, maybe that's through healing. Maybe that's because your nipples have been chewed to pieces. Maybe it's because you're having pelvic floor discomfort. I'm still navigating pelvic girdle pain 2 years postpartum, right? And that's another huge thread as well. So we might be feeling all of these things in our bodies. And, you know, if someone is being like, oh, you should be grateful for your body, I want to smack them in the face.
Do it. Just do it.
Because it's just erasing so many complex experiences. So yeah, I know I've gone kind of like monologue there for a little bit, but I'd be curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's also one of the things that happens, you know, if you've had, for example, birth trauma, and people sort of say, well, at least you got a baby out of it, or at least the baby was okay and stuff. And it kind of, it invalidates the fact that you also have feelings. I think that overall, we need to realize that actually, we should be giving women the permission, people the permission, that actually, the thing that should be lowest down on their list is how their body looks right now. And actually their mental health should be the biggest priority. You know, we shouldn't be having new mums that are worrying about, you know, having to look a certain way if visitors are coming around, or, oh my gosh, you know, I still have all this weight that I gained when I was pregnant that I haven't lost yet. Like, what we should be really doing is allowing people the opportunity to just care about how they're feeling right now. Like, are you actually managing to get some sleep? Are you managing to eat? Are you okay? Are you having some good days as well as some bad days, you know? And I think that sadly, it often feels like aesthetics kind of overrides that, and it should not be that way around at all.
And also, I think it's having the language to sort of be able to identify, you know, because diet culture, it teaches us to put all of that on our bodies, right? All of that stuff that we're feeling, the trauma, the grief, the shift in identity, the pain, the just complete what the fuckness of having gone through childbirth. We are told to package that all up into, there's a problem with how my body looks, right? All of that gets put on how our body looks. So having, you know, conversations like this where we can say, actually, yeah, I'm feeling weird about my body and how it looks, but what's behind that? What's below the surface there? And how can I maybe shift the blame and externalize the shame that I've learned to hold on to about my body and place it in its rightful place?
I just see so many people, because of the industry I work in, who are often thinking, if I fit into my old clothes, I'd feel less shitty, or I feel shitty because I've gained so much weight, or like, if I'll feel better when I've lost a bit of weight, I'll be able to wear this when I've lost weight. And actually, like you said, it's just you putting all of your, everything that's happened to you and trying to think, well, what can I control? You know, oh, it must be that it's because of my body. And I think that's, it can be really strong after you've had a baby. You can think, I'll feel more like me if I can fit back into my old jeans. And I think we have to be really careful of that.
And I really also don't want to invalidate how anyone is feeling about their body. I think, you know, all of those things are true. And, you know, it's something that I've been, you know, sitting with, and just like a little thread that I've been pulling on lately, because, you know, I have gained weight as, you know, over the course of not just pregnancy, but the whole past 2 years of living through a pandemic, living with a toddler who has like very, very demanding needs and, you know, who doesn't sleep, which means that I don't sleep. So there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's gone on for me personally. And, you know, I've noticed some of the clothes that I was wearing last year no longer fit. And, you know, especially that transition from summer out into autumn, when you're kind of putting your jeans back on and where you've maybe been wearing dresses or something. And just noticing, okay, they're a bit tighter. And kind of holding space for my own grief around that, because you are allowed to grieve your changing body, right? And noticing, for me at least, I'm noticing what that means in terms of Because as our bodies change shape and size, because we live under diet culture, that as our bodies get bigger, we lose privilege, right? So the closer we are to that thin ideal, the more body privilege we have, the closer that we are to that thin, wild, white, cis, het, et cetera, able-bodied ideal, the more privilege we have. So when our bodies change, we lose privilege. And so for like a really simple example of that is, you know, I would love to be able to go out and buy some new clothes because that would help me feel better in my body. But right now I can't afford to just go and get a whole new wardrobe. So there is some grief associated with that. And I guess wanted to hold space for people who are noticing the changes in their bodies and where it's not, you know, something easily accessible for them to go out and just, you know, get a new wardrobe or you know, do the things that would maybe help them feel more at home, more comfortable in their bodies. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that's actually a really strong theme when you're pregnant. You know, a lot of what we tend to hear from Bumpland members and from, you know, clients in the studio is this feeling that they've kind of lost control of their body, that that loss of control of their body, I think, is kind of like that overarching thread that we tend to hear a lot. And that can be really difficult for people, especially if in the past they've used fitness or diet as a way of kind of controlling the size and shape of their body. All of a sudden that's not an option, quite rightly, and their body is changing. And I think that's something people can really, really struggle with. Mm-hmm. And especially, like you said, you know, it's not as simple as just going out and every month buying new clothes that do fit you. Mm-hmm. Every month you're thinking, oh, now these don't fit. I've got even less options of what to wear. So I wonder if we can kind of talk to people who might be going through that slightly, where, you know, there isn't anything that you can do about it or should do about it. And so it can get a bit overwhelming.
So you mean from the perspective that there's this sense of feeling out of control about your body changing, but that you don't have much power to control things?
I think it's that the fact that your body is constantly growing leaves them with a feeling, a lack of control that is just quite scary for them. How can they sit with that? How can they feel better about that? How can they be okay with the fact that their body is changing and they have no control over that?
And this is in pregnancy or postpartum?
Pregnancy.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think, first of all, I just really would want to validate for anyone that can be a really painful, potentially triggering experience, especially if you've, you know, had any kind of disordered eating or eating disorders, or if you are a fat person, and I use the word fat in the sort of reclaimed sense, a fat positive sense of the word rather than as a derogatory kind of term. But yeah, if you have experienced stigma, let's say, because of the size of your body, or if you've, you know, been subject to anti-fat bias, if especially if you're a fat person navigating the healthcare system in a fat body, that can, you know, there's a lot that, you know, it can be a really traumatic experience. So I think I just wanted to, first of all, just validate, first of all, that, you know, if this is feeling difficult or painful for you, that's totally valid. And, you know, and if there's nothing that we can really, if we can't really change these circumstances, you know, you can't go on a diet when you're pregnant. Oftentimes the NHS, unfortunately, will recommend diets to people who are pregnant, which is just horrendous. But, you know, if you've decided not to go down that path, then I think that really the only option available to you, and this is something I've been sitting with as well, is just radical acceptance and radical self-compassion towards yourself. Just, you know, there's this fantastic video. Do you know the YouTube channel Style Like You?
No.
They interview all different sorts of people about their relationship with their bodies and with themselves ultimately. And there's a great a great one that came out quite recently with Adrienne Marie Brown. And she poses the question of, how would you be with your body if you didn't have to fix it? And I think that's something that I've been really encouraging my clients to reflect on as well. Like, what would it mean? What would it be like? What would it feel like to be with your body, to be in a relationship with your body, where you didn't constantly feel like it had to be fixed or changed? And that might be completely, pie in the sky thinking. It might not feel accessible. It might even feel kind of scary for you. But I think it's a really interesting thought experiment to just be like, well, what would that be like? How would I move through the world? How would I show up in the world? What, just kind of let your imagination run with that a little bit and see if there's anything there, in this thought experiment that kind of gives you clues as to how can I be more at peace with myself.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I mean, it's a tall order. Don't get me wrong. Like, that's, I think something that I'd really like to take people to take away from this is it's hard. Like, it can be really hard, especially the further your body has become from that ideal image. You know, there are real barriers there to access, to acceptance, to care, healthcare in some instances. So it's the both and. It's sitting with the duality and the tension of all of this. There is no one size fits all here. No pun intended. There is no one solution that is universal for everyone.
Well, let's talk as well, because we've talked about the fact that there's a lack of representation. We've talked about kind of fat phobia and this kind of thin ideal. I guess if we're thinking about some of those descriptors, personally, I am slim, white, blonde. And I still get, one day I might have one person look at my bump and say, oh, what a nice, tidy little bump. And then the next day someone might say, whoa, are you sure you got your dates right? Are you sure there's not two in there? Because it's very difficult to look at somebody's bump and actually assess how big that bump is compared to the general population at the same stage as you, unless you're a midwife, like tape measuring, which still is not even necessarily an accurate way of checking how big your bump is compared to other people, or where it should be. People love to make comments about the shape and size of a pregnant woman's body. And I can laugh at those comments, but the further I guess that you get away from that thin ideal, the harder those types of comments must fall. And I wonder how you would advise people to deal with those types of comments, because it's so easy for me to kind of say just ignore them or tell them to shush, but how do we navigate the fact that people do love to make comments about the size and shape of your bump? And that can be really difficult for some people to hear.
Yeah. I think in a lot of ways, I kind of got lucky with this part of my pregnancy in that we were in lockdown. So no one really had the opportunity to comment on my bump. I did have a recent experience. I'm not sure that this really speaks to your question, though, but it was almost kind of the opposite, whereby I'm now 2 years postpartum, as I mentioned, and about a month ago, my neighbor asked me if I was expecting number two, and I'm not pregnant. I'm definitely not pregnant.
That's a risky question.
And she, because she just looked at my stomach, my belly, and made a snap judgment. And what I felt in that moment, I was angry. I was really angry, because why are you talking about people's bodies? And also, I felt a lot of shame in my body. And I wonder if, I don't know, because I didn't have that experience, where people were commenting on that's not true. I had someone say once that my bump was neat, whatever that means. And then somebody else saying something. And I was like 4 or 5 months pregnant at that point. I was like, yeah, let's just wait a couple of months. And so I guess what I'm saying is that I wonder if for people, if that experience of having your bump, whether it's too big, too small, whatever, you know, that the other person in the conversation sort of is alluding to, if that elicits a lot of shame in people, that, you know, there's, you know, because some, I've heard of friends where people have mentioned that their bump is small, feeling really like, oh my God, am I, you know, doing something wrong? Is my baby mm-hmm. not growing? It elicits a lot of worry and anxiety at, frankly, a really already high anxiety time in your life. And on the flip side of things, if you're in a bigger body, I've also heard of folks where they haven't been read as pregnant because they're in a bigger body to begin with. And that also must be such a painful experience for, you know, your pregnancy and, you know, this really, what can be a really, you know, exciting point in your life, just that just be erased, that experience be completely erased. And so, yeah, what I don't know that I'm really answering your question, because ultimately the answer is don't talk about people's bodies. Mm-hmm. Don't comment on people's bodies. I remember writing a post, you know, I don't know, not long after I gave birth, and it sort of said, you know, if you're thinking about commenting on someone's pregnant or postpartum body, don't, right? Like, don't do it. And I think ultimately, you know, I would like less and less comments on people's bodies. But I suppose what you're asking is, what do you do when you're confronted with someone commenting on your bump size, you know, regardless of whether or not it's an accurate read of what's going on with your body? I think just holding in mind that your body is none of their business, and their opinions about your body are their business, and they say absolutely nothing about you, you know, your pregnancy, how you're caring for you and your baby, none of that stuff. So, you know, just I have a good friend who's a therapist, and her sort of like go-to mantra is like, that's their shit, that's not my shit. So that's their shit, that's not your shit. You don't have to deal with it. But also, I appreciate that it can feel painful, but externalizing that, you know, pointing the blame outwards and not directing that back in at yourself.
I really like that. I think that's just such a good idea. And you were really lucky in some ways, obviously unlucky to be in lockdown, but lucky to have missed out on those comments, because it is something we hear so often. And I think people do really get excited about a bump. You know, I don't always think that there's malice necessarily in these comments. I think some people get really excited when they see a bump and they just can't help say something. And what they're alluding to, you know, we might misread some of the things they say. You know, sometimes people say, when are you due? And I'll say Christmas Day, and they're like, really? And I'll think, oh, what, why are they thinking I look bigger than that or smaller than that? But it could actually literally just be that they're just like, oh my gosh, Christmas Day. You know, there is the potential that we might be misreading their reaction to our bump, but equally, people do just love to just say something. And I think sometimes it's just a guess, well, that's really big or that's really small, but it doesn't change the fact that it might be really painful to hear. And I love the idea of pointing the blame elsewhere. I like that. I might try and do that as much as possible.
I think that's true, you know, for anything that we're feeling about our bodies. Like, I think about my toddler. He has no fucking shame about his body. None. And we weren't born with that shame. That's something we've inherited. That's something we've learned. That's something we've been indoctrinated into. And there is something powerful in that we can redirect that shame outwards. We can unlearn it. We can externalize it. We can say, this doesn't belong to me. This is not mine to hold on to. This belongs to a system that subjugates bodies and, you know, tries to steal our happiness from us, to steal that sense of joy and connection that we can feel with our bodies, like we do when, you know, not everyone, of course, but that most of us had when we're children. And I think something that can be so powerful, you know, whenever your baby finally arrives on the scene, or if you've got a toddler, an older child, looking to them as these models of how we can be in our bodies. You know, going back to that question of, you know, how can you be in your body without trying to fix it? Like, I don't know, my kid is like rolling around all over the floor. He's like, knows when he wants cuddles, but he also knows like his boundaries, when he doesn't want people to touch him, when he, you know, he knows when to say no, he knows when to use his voice. And I think if we can embody a little bit more of that, then that would serve us really well.
I think that's really good advice. I love watching Freya, who's 3 and a half now, you know, before she has a bath and she's naked and she's running around, jumping on the bed, you know, no shame whatsoever. Isn't there thinking, oh gosh, you know, is this jiggling? And it's so lovely to watch. And I just watch it thinking, I hope that she always feels this way. And sadly, you know, unless diet culture disappears overnight, which I doubt, I don't think as a girl that she will always feel that way, but I just really try and enjoy it as much as possible whilst I can see it now, in that she's naked and she doesn't think twice about what she looks like. She just wants to have fun.
But a really strong protective factor to, you know, I agree with you, diet culture will disrupt that sense of embodiment at some point, but the research shows that for girls in particular who have, you know, strong role models around them that can show what it means to be embodied, to, you know, have a positive experience of embodiment, to use their voice, to stand up for what they believe in, to eat for pleasure and joy and satisfaction rather than dieting, to move their bodies for play and joy again rather than for, you know, trying to manipulate their bodies, all of these things will help them preserve that sense of positive embodiment in the long run. So, you know, I suppose what it is an invitation for us to really model that for them as best we can. And we don't have to be perfect. And also to have conversations about diversity in all forms, not just shape and size, but ability and gender and race and all of these other things that are so important. I actually did for my newsletter, did a roundup of like body positive books for kids recently. So that's maybe a helpful resource for parents who are not sure where to even get started because maybe they're not feeling great about their own bodies. But you know, you can do this work alongside your kids. Why not?
Yeah, I really agree. So then you've kind of touched on the fact that there's, you know, body positive books for kids. So I wonder if it's a nice segue into kind of for the people who are listening who are pregnant right now and who are really trying hard to stay positive about their bodies during pregnancy whilst they're changing. And we have all of this kind of outside input and thoughts and comments and media. And what would your advice be? What sort of actionable things can people do to boost their body confidence or to make sure that they get through this alive and, you know, that they are, you know, that they're feeling okay and enjoying pregnancy as much as they can without worrying about how their body looks?
It's tricky. I guess it depends on, where you are a little bit in your journey, but I definitely think if you're not familiar with concepts like intuitive eating, that might be a good place to start. I think I'm just trying to think of some resources that I've created that might be helpful. So for the bump plan, like we mentioned, I wrote an article on navigating diet culture in the pregnancy and postpartum. I can't remember if it was pregnancy or postpartum.
So you wrote one for the postnatal, and then we also have the pack that you did with lots of other writers for pregnancy as well.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I think it was okay. Kind of navigating body image during pregnancy that you contributed as well.
Okay. And then I'm having conversations like this on my podcast and on my newsletter, which is called Can I Have Another Snack? And trying to really, you know, speak to the duality, the multiplicity of these experiences, you know, the both and of feeling, you know, maybe like your body's doing this incredible thing, but also how difficult it can be to sit with the changes in our bodies. So definitely check that out. There is, let me just check this real quick, Holly. Sorry, you can.
No worries.
I'm just looking up this book.
I'll ask Stu to just edit this bit out.
Is it? Yes. Okay. So there are two books that I really love and recommend for my clients who are either pregnant or in that sort of early postpartum period. Even if you're not pregnant, actually, they're great books. So the first one is called My Body, My Home, A Radical Guide to Resilience and Belonging. And the other one is called The Wisdom of Your Body. And both of them touch on the concept of embodiment, self-compassion. They talk about trauma. They're both really excellent resources. The first one that I mentioned, My Body, My Home, is also kind of like more of a picture book with little prompts and things. So it's not, you know, I these days don't have much time for reading, but it's a great book to kind of dip in and out of. So that's a really excellent resource. I think, you know, all the standard stuff of like, really purge your who you're following on social media. Maybe take your, like, I took myself off of Instagram for a month in August, and it was the most amazing thing that I've ever done, because it just gave me more headspace to think about, you know, things that actually felt really important to me rather than what I was sort of being, you know, when you open social media, you never know exactly what you're going to be confronted with. Whereas with, even if you've curated your feed, whereas when I was off Instagram, I was like reading more Substack newsletters and reading books more, and just, I had more choice and could be more intentional about what I was consuming. So that might be something. And I think, you know, wherever it's accessible, wherever it's, you know, something that is available to you, finding, like, I don't know about you, Holly, but when I was pregnant, I bought these like really great, like stretchy, like bra and pants sets, and like these great like nighties and things like that were super, super comfy. But I was like, I'm just going to keep them for when the baby's born. But now I'm like, wear that shit when you're pregnant. Like, just be as comfortable as you possibly can. Find moments to connect with your body, even if they're just like little glimmers throughout the day. How can you find more comfort and more connection with your body? Those would be kind of things I'd be thinking about.
That's really,
it's really hard. Like, it's really hard to kind of distill this down into like a quick conversation, because this is work that I would do with clients over like months and months and months. So if this is, if this is feeling like, oh, there's no kind of quick fix for me, it's because it's hard work. It's like ongoing work.
I think for a lot of people, just actually kind of introducing them to the concept of diet culture and what is going on behind the scenes, so that they then are looking at things with fresh eyes and looking at what they're seeing on social media and realizing that actually, like we've said, you know, this person isn't even pregnant, so of course they don't look like me. You know, and so I think that's probably the start of it. And for people to start questioning what they're seeing and questioning the things that are triggering them, you know, at least that's a great start. And then, you know, we'll make sure we put those books in the list, in the show notes underneath, and then offline as well. Laura, if you think of any others, we'll add that in as well.
Sure.
But I think just initially just introducing the concept that, you know, this is going to be challenging at times, and being pregnant is physically tiring, but also can stir up all sorts of emotions. And that is not your fault. That is a product of, like you've said, diet culture and fat phobia and how much we give the way people's bodies look so much weight in that hierarchy. And so understanding that this is, you know, this is not your fault and your body is not the problem. The system is the problem, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
Point the blame elsewhere. I really like that. My husband's gonna kill you.
I mean, not necessarily people, but like, think about the systems, right? Like, what are the systems that are making us feel the way that we do? Like, the diet and wellness industry and weight loss industry are worth like trillions and trillions and trillions, and gaining more every year. And it's kind of a bit of a cliche at this point, but, you know, a common sort of question to ask, you know, people, a piece of advice that people often give is like, ask yourself who is profiting from me feeling this way in my body. And chances are it's a straight white dude. Have you seen the I Know Victoria's Secret video that's like doing the rounds on TikTok?
No.
So it's, is it Jax? I think her name is. She's like she's big on TikTok, and she babysits this little girl. And the girl was like, I guess like somebody had said something, some mean girl said something about her body. And she created this song called I Know Victoria's Secret. And it's just really catchy. You should link to it in the show notes. But it basically, it's like, I know Victoria's Secret and he's a white dude from Ohio, right?
Oh,
like
my God,
it's hilarious, but it's also like, it's so true. And I find that like, I take so much, there's so much hope, I think, from like Gen Z just calling bullshit on all of this stuff. Like, I think we kind of start, like, as millennials, elder millennials, we sort of started this conversation, but like Gen Z are just going to take it all the way. So, you know,
there is hope for the future. Oh, Laura, thank you so much. That's been so helpful. And it's also just been really nice to just chat to you about something that I know we both feel really passionately about and we're both quite angry about. even if we could just make a small change, that's all we can ask for, really. So Laura, thank you so much. It's been so helpful.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. And I hope that this has given folks something to think about.
Yeah, I'm sure it will have done. Laura, thank you so much. Everyone, enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.
Bye.
Firstly, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of Bun in the Oven, and I hope you found it helpful. For more support, do head to the show notes below to find links and supplementary reading you feel may be helpful to you. Secondly, this podcast can only help those who know about it. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much if you could subscribe to Bun in the Oven and give us a 5-star rating. While podcasts are easy to listen to, they take a lot of effort to create, and your support in sharing Bun in the Oven will help me encourage more guests to join me for future episodes. Thank you so much for listening today, and enjoy the rest of your day.